Hey folks, Dr. Nicole Truesdell here. As always, I'm your host and guide for this podcast, Evolutionist Dreamscape. So welcome. All right, y'all. So we're in episode 15, and this is a good one. I've got a conversation I'm going to be loading up after I do this intro, in which I'm talking to Alafia Stewart. Now, an Oakland native, Alafia Stewart is a social activist, DEI consultant, and why I brought her on the show for this episode. She's also an ATR, African Traditional Religion, Spiritual Safety Educator. When not in community organizing, she can most likely be found singing karaoke and or trying all the amazing food anywhere she lands. Alafia lives by the motto 2 + 2 = 4, but also does 3 + 1. There is almost never just one way to solve a problem, so diversity and perspective is vital. And I invited Alafia on because, like I said, I wanted to really get into this idea of spiritual safety, especially when folks are going into ATRs, whatever ATR it is. Now, Alafia is part of the Ifa tradition, and me, myself, I'm a part of the Lukumi tradition, which are all around the same branch, but this also applies to any of the ATRs. It could be Haitian Vodou, Candomblé, Shango Baptist, and the like, okay? And so this conversation was one in which we got into what does it mean to be a priest and priestess? Does everybody need to be one? But really, what is the kind of responsibility we have to embody our humanity in order for us to sit with our spirituality, right? And so Alafia does a beautiful job of breaking it down. And so we're going to go to that conversation shortly. But I got a couple of caveats before you listen to this conversation, okay? So we are in Mercury retrograde right now, all right? And Mercury is retrograding in Aries. Now, this is not an unusual thing. Mercury retrogrades at least 3 to 4 times a year. And this year in particular, Mercury is retrograding through all of the fire signs. So this one's going to be in Aries. The next one will be in Leo. The last one at the end of the year will be in Sagittarius. Now, this is a time that the astrology tells us that we need to be reviewing. So this is not something to fear. I know pop astrology, let's talk about Mercury retrograde. Listen, y'all, this is a natural occurrence. It's a way that the astrological time is trying to help us understand that it is not possible nor logical to think that you are always going to be going and quote unquote progressing in some type of movement without reflecting. And so Mercury retrogrades are a time of reflection. And they're also a time, because it's Mercury and Mercury rules communication, in which communication can get really fucked up in one way, shape, or form. Now, you're going to notice this in the interview that I did with Alafia, because Aries right now rules my sixth house, okay? And it rules my sixth house of work, daily routines, habits, health, and pets, okay? I ain't got no pets, but I do have work and daily routines. And my 12th house is ruled by Libra. And the funny thing is, Alafia and I recorded this conversation on the full moon in Libra on March 25th. And you will see that there was some technical difficulties we had because, y'all, the goddamn internet was not cooperating for either one of us. When she first got on, she got kicked out. Then when we were talking, it kept stopping so that I thought that she had finished the conversation. So I started talking or vice versa. And then it glitched and came back on in real time. And we realized we've been talking over each other. And so you're going to see this kind of jerkiness in the recording because, one, it was constantly glitching. And then two, even in the kind of exporting of it, it not only glitched more, but then it actually melded some of our conversation together. Mercury and motherfucking retrograde and having in my sixth house, okay? And on the day of the full moon, my 12th house of Libra, which is about relationships, right? And how we, and our imbalance and justice and the like, the 12th house of really literally talking about the other side, the dreams and landscapes bringing into the mundane in the physical side of the sixth house, right? This interview is the embodiment of all that, from the actual conversation to the technology around it. And last thing I'm going to say is while I was listening to this conversation as well, I also noticed that my mic is blown. So that's why I'm not using a mic right now. External mic. I'm using the computer one. And I have to still get another one once I can get the finances for it. Because I'm going to tell you something, working for yourself, like you understand that the kind of money you make, it might look good on paper, but then when you actually go through and have to do things like pay your overhead, pay your tuition, insurance and all the like, that shit looks real different. So I'm still building. So the mic will come as I continue to build, okay, and figure out what's actually a good one to use. So all those caveats are to say that the interview is great, but it's not going to be the quality that I would actually personally love. But I'll be honest, it's a good reflection for me to figure out what kind of technologies I actually do want to work with going forward, and also what I need to learn a little bit more of. And I do want to learn a little bit more of sound engineering, just the basics, until I can actually hire someone to help me. And again, this is also part of this energy. So we all learn, it's all there, but the conversation, the good gists of it are very clear. And I really do appreciate Alafia and what she said on this conversation. So I'm going to turn it over there. Before I do that, just real quick, y'all, your support is always appreciated and needed for me to be able to continue to create in the public. And you can do so in various ways. One of the biggest ways is if you can do so through my Patreon, through my Cash App, Zelle, PayPal, and Venmo. I'll have all those things in the show notes. And my Patreon is one in which I go into all kinds of different things. And I have a lot of fun actually doing the types of videos and reflections and community calls that we do. So go ahead and check that out. But you can also go to my website, in which I have a number of different services that you can also engage with. I do astrology readings. I am an executive coach along with an educational organizational consultant. So you can find all information and more again at my website, drnicoletruesdale.com. And lastly, before I go to the interview, I just want to say this. Let me know what you think, y'all. I really do enjoy reading the comments. And if I can't engage, because certain platforms I can respond back to, other platforms I can't. But your comments, your perspectives, your reflections, not only are really nice just to read so that I understand the community that is engaging with my work, but also it helps me know what people are interested in as I'm thinking about future episodes and future seasons, because this show's evolving. Last season was just about me talking about shit that I was going through in my life. This season, I'm doing a lot more conversations with other people, people that I want to be in community with. I'm bringing in people that I love on the show as well, as a way for me to be able to work with others and talk shit in the public, right? Who knows what next season is going to be, but your comments and your responses and your engagement really does matter. And I do appreciate it. So please let me know whatever what platform you're watching or listening this on, let me know what you think below. Okay. And again, if I can respond, I will. I'm going to stop there. I want to thank you all again. And let me turn it over to the conversation. And this is episode 15, the crossroads of the ATRs. Welcome back, y'all. Dr. Nicole Truesdale here. As always, I'm your host and guide for this podcast, Evolutionist Dreamscape. So welcome. I got a special guest today, a special guest that I'm really excited for. This is Ms. Alafia Stewart. And Alafia is on the show today because I want to talk about this idea of spirit. Right. And we've been talking a lot about spirit in the public. A lot of people are really interested, especially Black folks and brown folks, going into more indigenous practices, whatever that means. And for many Black folks in the diaspora, especially in what we call United States, the Caribbean, and places like Brazil, we see what we call African traditional religions, or ATRs. And both Alafia and I practice one of those ATRs, which is coming out of what they call the Ifa tradition of West Africa. And so Alafia is somebody who grew up in this tradition. I'm a little bit newer to it. So as somebody who was born and bred and also heavily embedded within and understanding the traditions, I wanted to invite her on today to talk about what is Ifa? What does it mean to be a priestess? Does everybody need to be a priestess? And what does it mean for us to engage and practice these traditions that are meant to be live, that are rooted in traditions that are meant to be stagnant? So what happens when the stagnicity of spirit that was needed to kind of secure these traditions in order for us to be over that middle passage and for us to be where we are today, what happens when the reality of the present is meeting us and asking us if this still works? And I think as of Alafia's background and her knowledge and the ways that she's committed to ensuring that folks don't get fucked up in these streets when you try to move into these traditions, I wanted to have her come on today and just shine her brilliance on us. So Alafia, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate being here. I love this podcast. I love you as a host, and I am really ready to get into this. We're going to have a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, good. Thank you. So Alafia, I want you to explain to people in this context, who are you? Who are you, and how would you kind of talk about yourself as a person, but then also as somebody who was in this tradition?
Yeah, so I would describe myself as someone who is on the same journey as many, trying to live my best life, trying to understand who I am, not only as a human, but also as a spirit inside of this meat suit on the planet. You know, what is the legacy I leave behind? What are the contracts that I have? Because I'm trying to fulfill them so I don't have to fucking come back. That's I'm trying to do my best to figure this out spiritually, because, you know, I don't want to come back. I don't want my name on the sign-up sheet for reincarnation, none of that. So whatever I can do in this lifetime to live well, to give to my community, and to also, you know, pay whatever debts are necessary to not come back, that's the type of time I'm on. Those are my goings on. That just so happens to be through the avenue of APRs, because that is the space that I was born and raised in. And yeah, and that's the avenue for my liberation.
So can you talk about what actual tradition you are in for folks who don't know? And then I know you're also a priestess, right? So what does that mean to be a priestess in Ifa, however you want to describe, right? And how does everybody need to be one if they're going to be in these traditions?
Yeah, so let me start off answering that question with no, most people do not. And let's use the logic that God has blessed us with. What would a society be if the vast majority of people were priests, right? In the context of how we understand priesthood. So I practice Ifa. I grew up in this religion, and my family transitioned from Santeria to Lukumi to Ifa practice. And so we've been practicing Ifa since my early days of high school. So my parents, they separated, but I made that transition, some one earlier than the other. But by, you know, college, we were all practitioners of Ifa. I think that as a community, people have, and we're talking about being colonized folks, right? We're speaking in English. So what a priest is and what the responsibilities of a priest are, when we think about the term priest, I think that a lot of folks have not done a deeper dive into what that means. I can be a priest, and that really means that I am an initiate within my religion. So what that means is that I have a different, and I wouldn't even say higher, I just have a different station within my community that has a spiritual title associated with it. You can be a priest and never have done anything with your priesthood. You can be initiated and have never been a working priest or someone who is a priest for the community. So I just wanted to make that very clear when we're talking about priesthood, because unfortunately, there are folks out there that say I'm a priest and they want you to latch on to what that definition is in your mind as to what a priest is, even though that might not be the reality of that person's station within the community. So I just wanted to make that clear.
No, I appreciate that, because that really helps us think about language, right? And whose definitions are we using to define these very foundational terms of a tradition that is not rooted in a Western mindset, right? So we're trying to use Western logic in a tradition that is asking us to have a relationship with logic. You know what I mean? And so there's a real difference on these streets, right? When those things collide.
Right.
But also something, I'm glad you mentioned this, because a lot of times people are really confused. And you said you went from Santeria to Lukumi to Ifa as a tradition. And many times, I think, and we can talk about this some more, people conflate Santeria and Lukumi a lot, right? And they don't understand that there are actual differences heavily, because not all traditions or not all houses synchronize, right? Not all houses and privilege the Catholic saints as a way to quote-unquote hide Orisha. So can you talk a little bit, Alafia, since you've been in these traditions, the kind of differences, and then also why you yourself shifted through these different iterations of Orisha engagement and worship?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are differences. And the differences are very, very clear, because it's the amount of Christian influence that you see present that will tell you what sect of practice you are worshiping. So in Santeria, you know, given in the name, you know, they're very visible, very intentional synchronization with Catholic saints. And so you'll see a lot more mass associated. You'll see a lot more espiritismo associated when you're in Santeria circles. And really and truly, a lot of folks approach, especially as outsiders, they'll approach African traditional religions through the avenues that are most familiar. And for a lot of Black folks, the attachments to Christianity that we have historically in this country make Catholicism and Santeria tend to be something that is a little more easy to get to, a little more easy to grasp onto, to have concepts around. And then you have the Lukumi sect, and there is much less, not none, because we still have Mass, we still have other elements, espiritismo elements that are in Lukumi, depending on what spiritual house you're a part of. And then you have, you know, your traditional Ifa that has none of that, or should have none of that. But also it gets a little sticky as well, because even the tradition of Ifa, the way that it's practiced now is not the way that it was practiced prior to colonization. And then we also have to really look at the layers of Islamic invasion and war, and how, you know, that, and missionaries of the Christian church, and how Nigeria itself dealt with colonization. And so even the way that we practice now is not the same as it was before. And I think it's really just a testament to the survival mechanisms within this religion, no matter where it shows up. And then also its adaptability. And that's the reason why it's been able to thrive and become one of the largest religions on the planet that so many people didn't know about.
Isn't that amazing? It can be so widespread and everybody don't know about it, right? Hiding in plain sight, this kind of thing, right?
Right.
Oh, but let's talk about that though. So there was a reason, right? So we have a reason why they was hiding, right? There was an absolute like survival mechanism and a logic to why our ancestors hid, right? Behind certain kind of iconography. So the Christians, it was the saints. And for those who didn't have Christianity, right? If you had Protestantism, we really had more of a like hoodoo influence, or even voodoo, right? There's a very difference. But for those who work with Orisha and the synchronizing, even though it had purpose then, do you think it still has the same purpose now? Like, do we need to be still synchronizing as hard as we are with the Catholic saints and through that site? Because is it actually helping us understand Orisha and what they wanted us to engage with now?
You know what? I think that is helping us to better understand the effects of white supremacy. And because that necessity to hide, depending on the history of therein. So for Black folks, it was a way to survive. For white practitioners, which we do have historically and otherwise, for white practitioners, there was an allure, a mysticism, an elitism that came with being a part of this mystic set. And for many, at least in the exposures that I've had in those particular spaces, it is about power and the maintenance of power. And you'll find that we deal with racism just like anything else. And you'll find that there are very, very white Caribbean spaces. And I'm going to say Caribbean because, you know, white folks, they'll be everywhere, right? That utilize this religion for power, and to understand that it is power, and it's the cash cow, and it is the extractionary nature of colonialism that is very, very, very much still present in the way that Orisha practice manifests itself in the diaspora. Depending on where you are and what sect you practice, it's more prominent in some spaces than others. When I was growing up, unfortunately, Orisha practice particularly was kept away from Black Americans on purpose. And a lot of people like to claim that it was something that had to do more with language than culture. And that's not true. And we really need to stop saying those types of things and have the reconciliatory conversations of there being folks who are not direct descendants of the people where this religion originates, that seem to have a superiority complex in dictating how it should show up in those folks who do have an ancestral birthright to the practice. And so that's a much larger conversation that a lot of folks are not willing to have. And then it also makes folks take a look and analyze. It's like, where am I getting the messaging around this very Black ass religion from? And whose mouths are it coming from? And am I doing the internal analysis to, you know, pick apart the and the messaging that I'm receiving about this very Black ass religion to my Black ass ears from non-Black lips? And I'm not saying that you cannot be a part of this religion and not be someone who is descended of this religion. And I think it would be very, very, I think it would be stupid for humans to believe that they can assume what an Orisha's intent would be for an individual, right?
I agree.
We can't do that. We don't have that kind of authority. But I will ask, and I will challenge, and I will do an analysis of why are you here and what do you get from being here? And where did your lineage disappoint you to the point where you would skip the ancestral practices of your roots? You know what I'm saying? And it's like, especially yeah. folks that have even more access than Black folks have historically had in regards to access to their indigenous practices. I'm always just like, you know, you could be mm-hmm. here, but why are you here? Why are yes. you here? Have you done the work to analyze if you were here for the pursuit of power versus the pursuit of knowledge and spirit? Have you asked yourself why you're here?
When I was talking sunsets and babalawos, I had this story, and this is where I knew that all of the bullshit that I was being told beforehand was bullshit. It's about, you know, things like the Orisha being mixed and Oshun being mulatto and all this stuff, right? This is when I always thought it didn't make no damn sense, but this is when I realized that, yeah, this don't make no damn sense. Two babalawos, talk to me about the first time they started to finally initiate Black Americans in these traditions in the 19th, is because he talked about in New York, there was a ile that was doing divination. Obatala came down, the owner of the white cloth, the one everyone talks about is all calm and smooth and stuff. If y'all don't start initiating my children into my religion, I'm taking some fucking heads. You will start initiating Black folks into their tradition. And I was in my Babas, and I said, for real? And they were like, yeah. They said they would not allow Black folks, whether they're American or Cuban. So it's not just American Black folks. They weren't allowing dark-skinned Black Cubans to be heads at their own damn table. And so when Obatala comes down, that whole ile essentially had a wake-up call, and then they initiated their very first Black priest. And so when I was listening to that story, I was like, well, then that really contradicts a lot of these foundational texts we get talked about Obatala always being calm, that it's about, you know, this idea that everyone is at the table, that, you know, the history doesn't matter because we're in these present moments. I think in that time, what I understood that was being told was that y'all need to let go of the oppressor because it is oppressing your ability to actually hear us.
Come on now. And we need right? to think about what narratives serve who? What narratives serve? Yeah. Who do we serve for the Orisha to be docile? For the Orisha to be reduced into roles of passivism, you know, placating, you know, love, light, balance type of shit. Oh, like, these are the things, the narratives that we see placed on the Orisha. And then it's just like, why is the focus, like, let's take my mother Oshun, right? We regularly see this overemphasis of sensuality and sweetness and this demure. And I'm like, but baby girl had her chest out, okay? Did what she wanted to do, was a business mogul, one of the greatest yes. diviners we see in their capabilities as Orisha. And it's like, why did you pick the things that could be codified into something that's number one sellable, right? And number one supporting of not only patriarchy but racism. Who is Oshun's yeah. white parent?
Why is she a prostitute? All of a sudden she's a mixed race, she's a mulatto prostitute.
And why was she ever broke? We are talking about a primordial energy. Why was she ever done? You see what I'm saying? It's like one yes. of the things it is like. There, and we try to, so this is my thing. Every religion, every spiritual practice, everything, we have to take an honest and analytical approach to anecdotes, because yes. the Ifa Corpus is a book of lessons and ethics that we aspire to be a part of, to live our lives under. But the way in which we show up in the world has to be reflective of the actual world that we live in. So it's just that static tradition. Even the people that say that, it's like I said before, the religion that we are practicing now is not the religion of 50 years ago, is not the religion of 100 years ago. So even when we're talking about tradition, there has to be a lens of how tradition has even changed historically in order to be the conversation that it is now, so we can better inform the conversation we're currently having for the future of this tradition.
And I think that's really important, right? Because when we think about tradition, again, whose definitions are we using? Because I love what you said, that ifa is this corpus. It's a body, but it's also alive, right? This is why we can do divination. It's a living oracle that helps us understand that we have to always be in flow. But yet we get tradition stuck down to us as static, right? It's like, we can't move it. It has to be, this is how it was. So whose definition of tradition are we even using anymore, right? In these traditions, and what happens, what historical past are we coming from? Because I find it really hard to believe, even we're talking about Oshun, right? And this idea of the feminine energies, and even how we are taught femininity and feminine energies, at least how I was in some of these traditions, it's still very patriarchal. I feel like I'm at church still sometimes. Like, I feel like I'm back in Catholic church sitting and listening to a priest tell me that I need to obey my husband, right? Or obey my father. And you can hear these kind of same sentiments in some of these Ilays with this idea of tradition, and especially in Lukumi, right, where women can't be priestesses of Ifa, where in Ifa you can be an Iya, Iya Nifa. You would not exist. A lot, you know what I've been told a lot by so many babalawos when I've said at that mat, Rula has come down plenty of times and said, I need to be at the table, right? A spiritual, like, men have to my face told me, if you were a man, I could teach you more. If you are a man, you'd be a babalawo. And I'm like, but didn't Ifa just tell your ass to teach me how to throw some coconut? Like, he literally, you just said, Ifa said, you need to teach me this. And you're telling me you can't because I don't have a penis between my legs.
So then what does that tell you about the conversation that you are having, that they're humans are gonna human regardless?
Yes.
So there are humans that are going to institute whatever their ideas, whatever their understandings, and whatever isms they're still holding on to, racism, sexism, misogyny, all of the ills, that when we're dealing with humans, we also have to understand that human ills have to be something that are consciously analyzed along our journey. Because what the Orisha will never do, never ever do, and that is put you in a position to where self is destroyed. Self-preservation, self-actualization, self-knowledge. It's like, it's all up and through what it is that we do. But because we are dealing with people, and I'll be very, very honest, we're also dealing with a lot of converts who are having titles they hold, again, linking back to what does a priest mean? Because what I have noticed is that people will assume the title, right? Because it comes with whatever it comes with. But then on the receiving end, particularly for converts, they're also coming with this. I feel like Abrahamic faiths have conditioned people not to question, have conditioned people to see positions of title as being the end all be all and where your own conscious analysis and critique of something stops. And that is the easiest way to get yourself taken advantage of in this religion, because people know that converts are coming from spiritual backgrounds of ignorance, and the tendency is to not question. And so you do yourself a disservice going back to ancestral practice without using ancestral analytics. Does this serve me? Is this something that appeals to my highest and best good? Is this something that triggers my nervous system? There are people that explore this tradition, and they believe that this is the way for them to get back to their ancestral roots. But the reality might actually be that we have generational trauma that needs to sit in therapeutic spaces before adding any additional spiritual anything. And that's something that I will always advocate. Before looking into spirituality and religion, let's look and analyze our own possible psychosis and our traumas, because those things, if we don't have a good handle on our understanding of self, will make us even more vulnerable to exploitation when you add that spiritual layer because of mysticism. Oh, you don't know anything yet, so I'm going to keep you ignorant. Oh, you haven't earned your way to this position, but what? And then I'm like, okay, so I understand wanting to be part of, like I was mentioning before we started recording, many people have a God-sized hole in their heart. And so in order to fill that God-sized hole,
what kind of analysis are we willing to do? Because there are people that will fill that hole, but is it being filled with the kind of God that loves you as you are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're really talking about the importance of deconstruction, right? In order for you to understand how, and I love what you're saying, this idea of authority, like who are you and who we've been taught to give authority up to, right? And Abrahamic traditions very much are rooted in, you've got to give your authority up to the God above, right? To Big Daddy in the sky. And this is where I push back against folks.
Without challenge.
Right? And if you do challenge, you're the problem, right? Not the systems or the structures or the institutions who are literally forcing and confining you to obey, right? So this is about obeying. And I've seen a lot, I'm glad you're talking about the converts, because I've seen a lot of folks who've come out of various types of Christian-based traditions, right? Coming into the ATRs. But when you've not done that deconstruction, especially, and I've seen this a lot with Black queer folks, you haven't realized how much Spirit has taken from you in the Christian space, because Spirit does know and can see your ashe, can see your light, but you're so used to giving it up and you want to be seen. So now you go to another place, you got a divination. Maybe it says that you're quote unquote special. I want you to think about this. If you've gone to a priest and you, all of a sudden they tell you, oh, you got this, that, and the other, you need to now be crowned, or you need to now, in order for you to quote unquote activate. Let's be real. This is a common ass thing we hear. You come into this new tradition, but you've not done the deconstruction. You've not done the deconstruction to actually bring your soul back into your body, right? You have not brought your ori back into the vessel, because you had to disassociate. You had to give that offering up at the altar of the Christian white patriarch. So when you're calling it back in, if you don't let it settle, you're going to go right back to what is familiar. And that familiarity is giving up your authority again, right? When you don't deconstruct. So this is why. Yes, right? You perpetuate the harm. And so this is why there's a, like, you, I love how you say, let's use some ancestral logic. I'm all about, let's use some damn sense, y'all. Let's use some logical sense. This is why in these traditions, we have, there's an order. Ori, yourself, your ancestors, then maybe if it needs to be, you'll have an Egbe, and then maybe then you'll work with Orisha. But the Orisha are always there. It's nature, right? You can go outside and talk to the water. You can go outside and talk to the tree. You really can. Literally, they're going to talk back. You can go outside and talk to the birds. They will talk back to you, right? Mm-hmm. But do you believe what you're hearing, y'all? And how can you believe it if you don't believe in your own spirit coming in and you can sit with it, right? So what you're saying is so important.
And be
so, go say that again.
Being uncomfortable. So yes. A lot of us, and I, again, leaning back into the conversation around how I think that we must first do an analysis of our traumas and the baggage that we carry before we add the extra layer of spirituality, because without doing that inner assessment, we could perpetuate harm, not only to others, but also to ourselves. I don't want to harm myself in my relationship with God. I don't want to harm myself in my relationship with self. But if all I know is giving up my power, not questioning, handing over my hard-earned money, okay, without thinking, does this deplete me? Because again, the Orisha will never ask you to give to depletion. And that's something that we need to make very, very clear as a difference between Abrahamic religions and this one. You are not earning your way into heaven with us. You're not. Leave that shit alone. Leave it alone. The reality is that we are all in this marketplace trying to figure out what our agreements are and to maintain those agreements. We are not here to barter our way into heaven. We are here to barter our way into the best life we can live on this earth. Okay? And so it's just, I really feel for all of us, because the ways in which I have seen the deterioration and also the lifting of the information veil, you know, the age of Aquarius is ending. We are stepping into an overt upheaving of lies and manipulation and deception. And we are in a really fantastic time where a lot of folks who are on the internet, because logic, I was raised to believe that logic didn't have to be loud, but on the internet, that bitch is screaming. It's like the lunacy is so out here that if you do have a knowledge set, if you do have that balance of mind and thought and criticism, that we have to be even though logic to me doesn't have to be loud, in order to be able to combat the misinformation, we have to be louder. And if we decide not to be louder, we need to be the ones who are creating the tools for someone to be able to amplify their own agency. I get tired just like anybody else saying the same. Everything that we're talking about now, I have said time and time and time again. And I know that my priesthood calls for me to continue to do that. But y'all, I be talking, okay? Mm-hmm. And then something I have learned that we don't want to talk about is that there are people who need their commitment to ignorance in order to survive their trauma, in order to survive their pain. It's like a lot of us are just a bunch of wounded individuals that are walking around bumping into each other. And then the more conscious of us are bumping into each other, hoping to do the least amount of harm in our interactions as we collide. And it's just, I have faith in us. I have faith in us that us as a collective, being one of the largest religions in the world, that we will continue to have our conversations. We will continue to out people who are parasitic in the way that they engage. But then I also believe that what's going to happen, or what is happening, is that more spaces of healing and analysis are also opening up. I don't advocate for anybody to part of this religion. I don't advocate for anybody to permanently consecrate energies to themselves. And it's just like, we've all had Orisha as companion into this existence, the ones that ushered your safe travel into this realm, right? Those people, those energies will always be accessible to you. But the vast majority of people never have to get initiated. For what? For what?
For what? And this is, there's so much here, Lafia, and I'm so happy you're bringing this up, because it goes back to this idea of how we're still using very colonial understandings of exchange, right? And of engagement when we're talking about these traditions. And so when we talk, I was on Threads and I was kind of responding to somebody's comment where they were saying, you know, they're coming back into their tradition, it's ancestral, it's Ifa, and they don't believe that they need to be paying a bunch of money to get divination and they have their head, you know, crowned and stuff. And, you know, I completely agree with that, but I did say, I agree, but there needs to be an exchange. You cannot, it's not about freeze. I think people really, we have to get out of these capitalistic understandings, because we're talking about indigenous practices. And as a priestess of Oshun, who is the marketplace, who understands and taught to us about what exchange really is and receptivity, right? There's a way that I think we have to remember that ideas and definitions and words like sacrifice, like exchange, like reflection, like those actually have different meanings in these traditions. But when you put a Christian understanding of it, then when you hear sacrifice, you're thinking, I got to give up something. I have to do something big. If you think that I need to exchange, you automatically think money. And then people will then really get in your head and say, well, they'll break it all down. You know, well, you got to pay all the drummers, you got this, you have the food and all that. And it's like, yes, there's a cost to that, right? But at the same time, is it always necessary? Why does everything need blood? Why does every Ebo require a chicken or a goat? Like, that doesn't make any sense with this kind of understanding of our relationship to nature and relationship to energy and spirit. So then when we're not really allowing ourselves, right, to break from the current structures, we end up bringing that spirit in and doing a better job of making sure that our oppressor is in us by literally reinforcing it in how we talk about our religion, right? Or our practice, I should say. We're making it a religion when it's supposed to be a practice, right?
Right, right,
and,
right.
And it's something that, you know, that was funny, because when I went in and started, you know, got a readings and stuff, and it came down that I needed to receive warriors. Now, this is something that I had kind of understood and needed, but I didn't know what the hell it was. Like, I knew I needed protection. Like, there was a way that my life was coming into a big ass crossroad where I could feel like my people being like, okay, we got to get you off this pot, because you fucking did. You're going in a whole different direction, and this is not what you wanted to do this life, right? So when I came in and received, you know, had the reading, received the warriors, and they were like, well, you know, you need to see Varula. Okay, I didn't really know a lot, so I did this, right? Get to Rula. Get the reading by the Babalawos to who has the head. And I sat there, And it was funny because my Spanish is shit, right? I can understand more than I can speak. So my godfather's from Cuba. So he speaks Spanish. He also has a little bit of English. The other babalawo speaks English, but he's mostly, you know, but Spanish originally. And as they're talking, I heard, like, it's like I could hear and understood what was being said, even though I couldn't understand what was being said. And I just heard like my spirit being like, you will not be crowned. You will be in line with your ori. Right. And so I was like, okay, like, what the hell is that? And I know what the fuck that meant. Honestly, I was like, I don't know what the hell. I think I'm going crazy in this. I'm not saying nothing in my head. I'm like, bitch, what are you to myself? Right. And then it came down, you know, that Shango has my head. And it was like in between Yemaya and Shango. And I was a little confused because I had actually felt more Yemaya. And so we came down between the two and found out head and feet, whatever. Long story short, he was like, my former godfather, he ain't my godfather now, was like, well, you know, you will need to be crowned Shango for health reasons. And I'm like, I don't understand. I said, what's the health reason? Like, now my academic brain coming in, because I also understand this is a cost to this. And he was like, well, then the sales pitch came. Well, if you want to do it in Cuba, it's 8. If you want to go to Miami, it's 12. But if you want to stay in Rhode Island, it's 10. And I was like, $10 a like, $100. He was like, $10,000. And I said, why? Just looked at him and I was like, why? I said, and then he literally said, all of them kept saying, well, if just ask the Orisha and they'll give it to you. Right. And I said, I don't understand. You're telling me to go ask Shango for 10 grand so that I can be crowned by him when I literally have my rent to pay. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was such a confusing type of experience. But in that moment, I kept hearing, you're here to know you. You're here to know you. You're here to know, like, and so in that competing space, right, I'll be honest, if I wasn't so stubborn, quite frankly, and if I wasn't so academically inclined to always having to feel like I don't know enough, right? It was that kind of imposter syndrome. It was actually helpful because it stopped me from literally diving deep into a tradition that my body was telling me, this doesn't actually make sense, Nicole, though. Like, you came in for a reason, but this part of it doesn't make any sense.
And that's really your ori. That's really, you know, who you are, paying attention to your nervous system. So a lot of times what we don't do an analysis of, and then on top of that, I'd be like, okay, well, if it's supposed to happen, the money will come to me and the Shango will make sure that it happens. So until Shango makes sure, this is not something that's going to be on the table. And a lot of things that a lot of folks don't even know that, and it's like, I try to say this and a lot of people get very, very, very upset that I know this. The prices that are given to you are the prices for a service. And number one, you should have a contract for that service. But number two, most people don't know that that number is negotiable. If you knew what you were looking at, you could say, I don't have that. I don't have that, but this is what I do have. Ask if it will be received. And if you know what to look for, and this is another reason. So in my online class, I'm like, so these are, because at the end of the day, Orisha religion is a cash crop. We are not a poor man's religion. I know that can be very, very alarming to some people, but this is not a poor man's religion. And then the way that I'm saying this, I want to support what you're saying about what we understand of energy and exchange. This is not a religion where you do not give. And the definition of sacrifice is the actual, the person that you were when you came into this religion. That is who you're sacrificing in order to be able to write a new story for yourself that is in higher alignment. Destiny, because we believe that two things are certain, birth and death. How you get from one to the other is infinite in its possibilities. And so divination and initiation are supposed to be tools in which to guide the highest and best path for yourself from A to B. Okay. And in using it, think about how you use tools versus you use how we have been conditioned to use religion. That's another thing. We're not sitting with divination is a tool. And what is that tool for? For you to get from A to B to live your highest and best life. And then the use of that tool is what you're being charged for, not the spirit behind it. Okay. And I feel for all of my people, Okay. And mm. then on top of that, like, let's really call it what it is. We are in a recession. And spirituality is recession proof. Okay. When things are bad on the outside, churches fill, temples fill, okay? Groups fill. And now it's like we've seen how many of our folks have been in cults that are, you know, harmful to them. Most recently, we see it all over the news right now with the sentencing of, I forgot that young man's name from Carbon Nation. It's like the folks that are walking around with a God-sized hole in their heart are coming together, and they're coming together around loud-ass lunacy because there is a desire to abandon self in order to find safety in someone else. And unfortunately, when you do that, it's usually to a monster, and we just don't know it because we've been raised, you know, on the constant fight or flight, trying to survive the monster that is existence when you are a Black or brown person in this country.
You said something really important though, Lafayette, because this is how it misuses and redefines terms for us, like sacrifice. When you said sacrifice is about really letting go of who you thought you were to really show up who you are, like I'm re-paraphrasing, that is exactly what it is, right? Like, and that is something that is the one thing I've really learned in Ifa. And I always say the same thing. I will never tell you to convert to something else. And if I ever tell my people all the time, if I ever even slip on accident, you check my ass, because this is not about you going into somebody else's faith. It is about you coming into a sense of self. Like, can you bring your spirit down into your body and actually have the divine in the mundane come together finally, right? To be human. And so when I think about, right, sacrifice, the one thing Ifa taught me, and this is also funny I want to get into, is it was Ifa that helped me realize that I was living a heteronormative lie. And so it was for the first 2 years of sitting at that mat, and I talk about it in a couple of my episodes last season, is like, Ifa was trying to tell me that I was gay. Every single time I was on the mat, they were like, look at your husband. Do you like him? Do you really want to be with him? You know, we one time Ifa came down and Rumila was like, listen, you bring somebody, another woman into your house, it's going to be a problem. Now, what did my godfather interpret that as a man? Well, if I bring a woman in, my husband's going to cheat. Ifa was like, no, ho, you going to cheat. You, this is about you. This is about you. And then June kept coming down. I'm trying to do all. Mm-hmm. Listen, I was crazy up here. I will always admit this. I was little because I was breaking. Ifa, like when I came in because they were like, we have got to break. You are breaking, so we need to break you open. You have got to let it go. You have got to sacrifice this idea that you have to be confined, that you have to be miserable, that you have to always be giving up of service to everything else. Like they were like, who told you that? We didn't ask you to come down to this raggedy ass space to be miserable. Why? And I would look at them, I'd be honest, and I would just be crying, right? And I'd be in there, I'd be so confused because I was using the definitions of my oppressor inadvertently, right? I was still thinking sacrifice, man, I had to be rigid. So y'all, Olaf, you're gonna laugh. When I first came in, I swear to God, I had a mini Botanica in my house because I was always doing some. I would give me 24 white 7-day candles. Like I'm sitting here, I had a skull candle. I had blue, I had comfort, I got all kinds of shit, right? That's what I was thinking it meant to be in there, right? And so they, and, you know, Alicia, my ancestors let me go crazy with that. But after a while, they were like, we don't need the tools. We mm-hmm. need you to become the tool. We mm-hmm. need you to be mm-hmm. in the body and mm-hmm. listen to yourself. Do you trust yourself, right? And it was, and so when I think about sacrifice and what you're saying, I really want people to listen to what you're saying. It's like, can we understand that there is a cost, yeah. there is an exchange,
yeah.
but that cost is you being human again.
Another thing,
but can you be human?
Miss is that we don't practice a religion of perfection. We practice yeah. a religion of practice. How do we practice our humanhood in a way that brings us to our highest and best self and therefore our highest and best destiny? And it's not asking for perfection, right? It's asking for your dedication to yourself and your self-development.
Yes.
There may be some elements that come up for you, and those elements that come up for you that are outside of yourself are in order to help you to become your highest and best self. And another thing that we need to, as a community, just in general, we need to throw away our elitism and our respectability politics, because there are plenty of practitioners of this religion that are harming this religion with the full support of the Orisha, because we don't have no fucking clue what was in that contract before they got here. And part of that contract may have even been the chaos that they are a part of on Earth. And that is something that we really need to sit with, because we also have to understand that villains have to be a part of our story. But the goal is for us to not be the villain in our own story.
And see this, that's a good word off you, because that's where I also find Christianity in particular really coming in, even in the Ifa, the more Ishe traditions, this idea of good condition, and how many, I've heard a lot of people talk about the good condition, right, that we're supposed to be having as part of our destiny. Oh. And it really ends up sounding a lot like Catholicism once again, like basically be a good person, like this idea of perfection, you know, like exactly. And so I'm glad you're talking about that, because it's about the message. Messiness and the duality of life versus this very binary good, bad, up, down, yes, no, right? There is this idea that there is the chaos is needed in order for there to be a balance of calm, right? So do we understand that the ideas of good and evil, right? What's so good about what we're in right now? And if this is considered good, the society we're in, should we redefine the definitions of kind of binary good and evil? Because really, we think about indigenous practices, it's about stories, right? And the storytelling, and if we think about the Patakis, if we think about all of the Odu and the stories within those as well, sometimes there's no quote unquote good person or good character. Like sometimes it's a story about everybody fucked up. So what are you gonna learn from this when everybody's fucked up, right? And it really challenges a Western storytelling construct of the hero's journey, that there always has to be a hero and a villain, and it always is opposite, and it's one a binary. Ifa's like, no, you can be the hero and villain, period, in one body.
At the end of the day, right? Because you will come here ushered by the energies of Orisha, but at the end of the day, this is your life and the only one that you have. And so I agree. And we did not come here to suffer. And that's something else that folks bring with them that they don't want to talk about, is that they bring the self-sacrificing in a way that is super harmful to oneself. And that comes from a different religion. That's not something that is ours, but it's something that humans have brought into this religion and in the way that they practice. Self-sacrifice should be of the bad habits, not of the things that make us human. You shouldn't have to sacrifice the good of you for the emergence of this other being, right? Because that other being is you. It's supposed to amplify your core principles and you fortify who you are in the way that you show up in the world as yourself. It's not supposed to be something that is tearing you down in a way where you lose the humanity of you. It's supposed to strip off the extra shit so that you can build upon those core values that make the humanity that is you in this body in this time. And good and evil, what? Like, it was something that I want us to do as human beings is also check our human nature for how we tend to categorize things. If I was a being, that an entity that lived beyond time and space, do you think I'd give a damn about your titles? Do you think I'd give a damn about the categories that you're trying to put me in? Because the reality is that you need those categories for your limited consciousness to be able to ingest me as an entity, not the other way around. I think this exists. You that need those labels, those boxes in order to be able to digest me in a way that's not going to make you go out of your mind.
So you're really talking about, we have to take responsibility for our lives, like, which is something that we're not taught to do in these kind of Abrahamic traditions, because again, it's about giving up the authority and being told what to do. Right. So this is where I've seen a lot of folks who get uncomfortable when they do the converting between an Abrahamic into an ATR, when no matter what it is, it can even be Haitian Vodou, honestly. But it's the ability to have to be a responsibility, and that there are, like, you make a choice or an action, there's a consequence to that. It doesn't have to be always negative, but you have to then learn from it, right? Like, you have to own the next step. But when you're not used to doing that, and you talked about it earlier, which I love, this idea of being comfortable in the uncomfortability. You have to learn that anything familiar, you have to reject, because this is part of you re-understanding and reassessing what all these foundations mean, right? So I think I really appreciate how you're speaking about this. And for folks who want to understand more, I'm going to have in the show notes Alafia's courses, because I know she does a divination 101, and also the cult. You have one about how to basically spot, make sure that you're not in a cult, which is really important. Along with, she has some things about spiritual baths and chants. I'm going to put all Alafia's information down in the show. I want to make sure I didn't forget that before we finish up, because I think this is really important, because it's really about knowledge, right? The more you understand, and the more you understand, right? But this is also a thing, you got to give yourself time. So if you're coming into this tradition, you can't expect to know. And even if somebody did tell you something, would you understand what you're being told?
There are a lot of people that are practicing this religion as a business and not as a way to enlighten and uplift others. And so the clearest way for you to be able to spot that is, what is your growth and development plan in that space with these people? With this person, whatever your scenario is. Because if you do not have a plan that includes your spiritual and ritual independence from that entity or from that person, then you can automatically assume that you are a resource to that entity or to that organization or to that person. And anybody that whose livelihood is dependent upon your salvation is somebody that I don't give a damn how long you've known them. If you don't know their full government name, you don't know them. If they don't have a plan for you, you don't know them. If you have not had an opportunity to speak to at least three other people that person has had a longstanding spiritual relationship with, and they are not spiritually independent of them, how long have people been around? And so I just want folks to treat these tools as if they are consuming services. If you are consuming services, you need to have receipts. You need to have contracts. You need to have all of these things, because at the end of the day, things cost. They cost in various ways. And you want to make sure that you are covering yourself in the material, and don't let somebody bully you into thinking that something, that spiritual work is not work. This is a contract. Guard yourself in the way that you engage with this religion for as long as you humanly or possibly can, because at the end of the day, humans will human, and greed is a human thing.
And Ifa says that in a lot of the Pataki's, right? They will talk about greed and talk about get your mind right. We call it discernment, right? Or intuition. But Ifa literally says over and over in various you're going to get got in these streets if you are not grounded in your knowing, right? And sometimes the lesson comes when you get got, because you learn from the lesson, right? So this is the thing too. Everything's always not going to be perfect. So sometimes you will, because you don't know until you know. So sometimes, I tell people all the time, I got taken. My godfather owes me some money. He said he was going to give it back to me. And I went to Sean Go and said, Listen, Baba, I learned my motherfucking lesson. Now I want my shit back, right? I'm from Chicago still, right? So this, I'm leaving here with something, right? I learned the lesson. That's the thing. I had to learn the lesson, right? And they told me not to do something, and I thought but I didn't understand it, right? So therefore, I had to learn the lesson. So can we also put shame to the side, judgment to the side, when we're coming into this tradition, so that we understand and really learn what the spirit's trying to teach us, right? But again, this goes back to what you were saying earlier. You have to know, what is the plan? And if you're going to somebody, y'all, this is how I say it as an educator overall, if you're not being taught anything, then what are you actually gaining?
Learning is you are being conditioned to continually not to question. You are being conditioned to contribute. Like I say all the time,
listen,
question, because folks will not even see things that are right in their face. What are these mandatory offerings for this spiritual e-leg that you are required $205? I've even heard up to $500 a month that folks are paying for a monthly required spiritual work in some of these e-legs. And I'm just like, so why are you paying for spiritual work that has not been defined as something that you need? If it hasn't been marked as something that you need, why are you doing it? And then I understand maintenance, right? I understand maintenance, but why does your maintenance have to come in that form? I know that for some folks, that maintenance of your energy and that comes in the form of a bath. That comes in the form of getting your once a year reading, and then you make your contributions to whatever particular divinities that are outlined for you. But that's the end of it. So it's just like when we're doing even in thinking like those types of things. It's like traditionally we didn't have everybody and their moms had their own shrine in their house. Mm. You had a family shrine or a temple shrine. And so all of your sacrifices would go there. You didn't have to keep it because it was something that was anchored within your lineage. And it's like when we zoom out, right? And we look at the historical context and we don't do enough analysis of how ATRs, how they've shown up here in the United States specifically, because what we don't want to talk about is the history of extraction. So even the way that religion is practiced here is an extractionist culture in comparison to other places, because this was a place where you could get American dollars and they could be exported to other places. And if you are doing ceremony, the goal is to also feed the community. Don't let anything go to waste, right? All of those things. Where people are not sitting with is the idea. And my thing is, be honest. Some people are okay with understanding that their contributions do go to somebody's second house, okay? Do go to somebody's, you know, third car. Do go to all of these other things. They also can see them going to the community. They can also see the works going where they want them to go. Your money is your energy. Tell your money where to go. Don't let it tell you where you should be. Money.
Mm-hmm. And that's a word. That's a word, Alafia. This idea of money as an energy, and it's Daughters Oshun. Y'all better listen to the Daughters Oshun. She's talking about this is what it is. Very true. Money, you have to work with that energy of money. And this is, again, where capitalism as a spirit, is why I talk about colonization being a spiritual warfare, came in and co-opted and corrupted how we engage with the energy of money. And so I think that's another thing, which is why it's so important to come and get rooted down in a sense of self and grounded outside of these projects through deconstruction. Because when you're coming in and you're sitting down in these spaces, when you're hearing these words, you're using a different way to understand and analyze it through, right? Versus this the same thing of using the old in a new space that doesn't make any sense, right?
All right. So I'm going to put all of that in the show notes, y'all. So please check that out. And then like I said before, I'm going to have Alafia back on. And how about next time we talk more about this idea of what does it mean to build community as part of these traditions, right? And in a society that's anti-community. So we'll talk about that and some more next time, y'all. Okay. So as always, keep dreaming, keep imagining, because it's in the dreamscapes that we can actually find the possibilities for futures where we can actually live. Till next time.